Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Patrick, what are you doing?
Oh, I was just thinking about my high school days. There was this one time when I was cutting class.
Oh, and Patrick, let me stop you right there. You know who else used to cut class? Jimi Hendrix. And you know what happened to him? He died.
Jim, what are you talking about?
I'm talking about this, Patrick. You can't go through life cutting corners. You know who used to cut corners? Janis Joplin. You know what happened to her? She died. Okay. Patrick, let's do a Patreon episode today. How about that?
Great. That'd sounds be good. Really good to me.
We've done a lot of fan mail lately. We're kind of getting that cleared up. Now we're going to get back on the patron track. So anything we can do to engage the listeners is a great thing. And if we have some listeners who are patrons, they donate to the show on our Patreon, patreon.com/suburbspod, and they come on and they pick the topic. We let them pick the topic, which we really enjoy because we get great topics that way.
Yep, we do, and our listeners are smarter than we are, and some of these episodes have become the most listened to and loved episodes of our entire podcast, so it's amazing, yeah.
It's a great thing, and speaking of love, last time we had this patron on, we ended up making it a two-episode exploration of the band Love, so without further ado, let's welcome Nick Scalera, ladies and gentlemen.
Thanks, guys. Great to be back, as always. And I'll try to keep this to one episode. Got my promise.
It worked out great last time. I thought that was really, yeah, really good.
That was very well received.
That was fun. I love that very, very much.
What is the topic today, Nick?
So this will be a little bit different because I'm going to try to attempt to talk about the music that was used in a television program. And so I'm going to try not to drop a ton of spoilers or to talk about things you'd normally want to watch. But the idea here is to talk about the sort of very well-loved cult series of the late 90s called Freaks and Geeks. Mm-hmm. It was a show that premiered in 1999 on a major network, NBC. Didn't last very long, was canceled, but has had sort of a major impact on pop culture and is now back on Hulu in its entirety with all the music cues. So for those of you who have never heard of this show, I hope this sort of piques your interest and you'll check it out. And for the rest of you, you'll know exactly what maybe we'll give you a deeper, sort of appreciation of specifically how music is used. And it's pretty rare, actually, especially in those days, for essentially sort of a drama slash comedy to have just a huge and varied soundtrack. There's like 120 some odd tracks that were played in the run of this series.
Wow.
And music is just absolutely integral to the plots. And I'll certainly talk about that. It's so integral. I mean, it and why it sort of rings so true to me, and I think it will ring to a lot of people, ring true to a lot of people in our age demographic, but also it's fairly universal. Just how important music is to growing up and how important it is to going through high school and finding out different music and meeting different friends and like what a big part of the experience that is. So that is what we're going to attempt to do.
All right.
That's hopefully next one episode.
That's great. And I'll just say before we dive in, I am very much in the former camp. So I was gonna prepare for this episode a little bit earlier today, and I was like, all right, I got this. You know, I'm gonna go refresh my memory here. And I was thinking of a completely different show.
Really?
I have never seen this show. I had it completely wrong. I was thinking of a show called My So-Called Life with Claire Danes.
Another good one.
And I thought that's what this was. I had that in my mind. Jared Leto, I guess, was in it too. And that was on TV for a short time and was kind of well loved. I thought that's what. Huh. So I had it completely mixed up. And so I have never seen the show.
Another high school show that lasted like one season that was critically acclaimed. Yeah. But,
So I don't know why. I just had, and I was thinking 80s for this, but obviously, as Nick said, late 90s. And, that was a time when we had three small, children, and I don't remember doing a lot of TV watching during that time. So this one, I'm going to be learning a lot today. So I'm looking forward to
it. It's late 90s, 99, like Nick said, but it's a period piece. So it's set in 1980.
Oh, and okay.
Maybe goes on to 81 or something like that, but it starts off in 1980. But I also did not watch it at the time that it was originally broadcast. I don't know that I'm probably like you. I don't think I was really watching much of any like regular television back then at that time. But I did watch it a few years ago on Netflix. Watched the whole thing because what is it, like 18 episodes or so?
Correct.
Something like that? Yeah. Hour long episodes or a little bit less without commercials. And I did that a few years ago, but then to refresh my memory, I rewatched some of the episodes now on Hulu. And I know it's been in the news lately because as Nick said, they got all the music rights clearance for this new release on Hulu, which I guess they didn't have with the Netflix before, even though I remember a lot of the music being in it. I guess it maybe wasn't complete before. Is that the case?
It was not complete. And the music rights were an issue for this from day one, and we'll sort of talk about that as we go through. But it's mega expensive to license all these songs. And for a long time, the show sort of lay dormant because the producers wouldn't let it get distributed without the music. The music is so intrinsic to
it.
But it's not cheap. Luckily, Hulu came. Netflix licensed most of it, maybe 85-90%. There were a few places that didn't. But Hulu's got the full on. So everything's been licensed. So you can get the true experience of what it was like back in 1999. For those who did watch it, I was one of those. I guess folks won't be surprised to hear. I was like on board with this show from day one, and I was the diehard. This was one of the first shows that had kind of like a pre-internet campaign to try to save it. It developed sort of a cult following, and there was, you know, these are very early days of the internet, but you know, NBC would not post the website URL on TV because they were worried that people would not watch TV. You know, that was in those days, right?
Really?
But there was a campaign to save the show because it really hit with a lot of folks because just of the authenticity of it. And just, it's a great, great show, but it's not your typical network program. Certainly not for the late 90s, not in any way, shape, or form. It's I think, extremely funny, but it's not laugh, ha, ha, like a comedy. And there's some difficult moments in it because it's kind of like real life, right? And so, it just never kind of clicked on air.
It's one of the more accurate portrayals of high school, I will say. It doesn't, in fact, there's a joke right at the very beginning of the very first episode that sets it up, what I'm about to say, which is that it doesn't portray high school as this like magic time in a young person's life kind of thing, you know, carefree days of youth. It shows you what a struggle it was, you know? And so absolutely, there's all of that. And the music does play a big role in sort of, I think, helping a lot of these kids, you know, get through this. And and we all, I'm guessing here, we all went to high school in the 80s, right? So I think in particular, I think we can really relate, but I don't think you had to have had that exact experience to get it.
I don't think so. And I think, you know, there's new generations of fans coming to this. My daughter, she's 16. She, you know, she's heard a lot of this music from me, obviously. Some of it's not a surprise, but like it translates pretty well, I think. In terms of just the basic struggles of getting through the day in high school. It's a lot of what this deals with.
Yeah.
All
right. So where do we start here, Nick?
So just to give a little bit of background. So this show was created by a guy named Paul Feig, who is still very active writing and creating TV shows today. It's based on his experiences growing up in suburban Michigan, right? Rocking the suburbs. This works, right? So it's as a show that he decided at one point that he really wanted to write something true to life about his high school experience. And he was in high school, late 70s, early 80s, outside of Michigan. And he was obsessed with authenticity. And this is like, I want to see the kind of high school show that portrays what it's really like, not like what we normally see on TV. That's where he started. Mm-hmm. The basic premise is that you've got freaks and you've got the geeks. There's sort of two groups of people here. And as we all remember, like we all sort of move in and out of groups in high school. That's kind of how it works. One other quick thing to note is the other main force behind the show is a name that a lot of folks will have heard of. It's Judd Apatow, right? So Judd Apatow is the executive producer. And he knew Paul Feig because they were both sort of in the comedy scene, you know, like stand-up comedy at the time. And Judd had started to do some television. He's super involved. He writes a few episodes, too. And his music interests start to get in. So it's not all Paul. It's sort of Paul and Judd. And there's the main guys. But cool. All right. So let's talk about right with the first episode. So the pilot episode. you can see really all the stuff that I want to sort of dig into about how essential music was right in this first episode. And it actually starts. So, the episode sort of is about, how Lindsay sort of rebels from being a brain and starts to hang out with the freaks. Right. And then there's another subplot about her brother being bullied, which is another thing the geeks get bullied often, so that's the thing that happens. But the opening scene, and I'll describe this a little bit. I didn't want to do a lot of describing video, but I have to kind of set this scene because this to me sets up the whole series. You come in, it starts, right? First thing you see is it's outside, it's football practice. And there's a football player up in the stands with a cheerleader, and they're having this discussion about how much they love each other. It's like, oh, you just love me so much, it hurts, And it's sort of like the jock and the cheerleader, totally stereotypical. Then the camera, and there's sort of this happy sort of not real music, but this sort of background music with them. And then the camera pans underneath the stands, right? Underneath
under the bleachers, the stadium, yep.
Under the bleachers.
Right.
And under the bleachers, you see the burnouts hanging out, right? So you got Daniel DeSario and Ken Miller and Nick Andopoulos in there. Probably, I think they were smoking weed. I don't know, maybe not. But they're just hanging out down there. And they're having, and I think what the best, I have a clip of this, and Jim, I don't know if it's about a 50-second clip.
Okay.
And we can sort of actually hear what's happening under the bleachers, and the use of music in this is just masterful. So you cut from this sort of happy music with the jock and the cheerleader, and then you cut to this bit.
Oh man, you want to hear something way messed up? You know that Molly Hatchet shirt I was wearing the other day? You know the one with the executioner guy holding that bloody axe under his foot, the severed head?
Yeah. That's my shirt.
Yeah, so my mom, she makes us go to church every week. And we gotta dress up. And so I get there, and the stupid priest says I can't come in.
You can't wear stuff like that at church, man.
Why not, man? It's church. You're supposed to forgive people there. So you hate my shirt. Forgive me. Let me come in.
Hey, I believe in God, man. I've seen him. I felt his power. He plays drums for Led Zeppelin, and his name is John Bonham, baby. Yeah.
So you see in that scene, we got Running with the Devil, right. Van Halen. And we get a discussion of a Molly Hatchet t-shirt, which that just killed me from the beginning because, I don't know about you guys, but Molly Hatchet was weirdly a big band, a band that people knew. The t-shirts were worn a lot among the burnout crowd. And I always wondered how much they actually knew about Molly Hatchet's music or if it was actually the images, because those disturbing, bloody, gory images were that was a t-shirt that was going to cause a lot of discussion. But then you get the John Bonham is God, which is just a fantastic quote. Nick Andopoulos is a drummer. We'll talk about that. He's obsessed with John Bonham. So then the other bit that's not in the video that we just heard is, so you get this, Jason Segel saying his name is John Bonham. I've seen God. His name is John Bonham. And then it cuts over to the geeks, right? So the geeks are walking on campus somewhere, and they are doing the kind of thing that a lot of us did, which is they're running lines from Caddyshack. Y'all remember the movie Caddyshack?
Of course.
Caddyshack was a huge film for comedy nerds. And the geeks in the show are kind of, they're into comedy. They're into Steve Martin. They're into Bill Murray. So they're kind of running lines, and they're very nerdy kids. And if you watch it, you'll see. They certainly have the look of nerdy kids. They're young. They're not 23-year-old actors. They're young, nerdy-looking kids. They look like real kids. So they're having fun running those lines. And the music you hear is I'm All Right by Kenny Loggins, which is a theme song from Caddyshack.
Right.
Yeah. So they're just having a good old time. They're walking along, of course, and they're having fun. And then who comes up but the nemesis, Sam's nemesis, Alan, who's this bully who cannot leave Sam alone. He puts him up against the thing. He's like, oh, what are you, doing? What's wrong? So he just gets in their faces. So that to me is sort of in a nutshell. That's the whole show, right? That is... The geeks trying to do their thing, getting bullied. The freaks are sort of underground. The jocks are on top having fun. And then the last scene is Lindsay Weir. And she sort of comes up to the bleachers as if she wants to approach the group of burnouts, but she's not quite ready to go there yet. She's got, she's changed her appearance. She's wearing an old army jacket now, you know, so she's trying to sort of get entree into that group. So the other thing I want to mention, and we can probably just play a bit of this, is, you know, if you're going to have a good show, you got to have a good theme song. Well, let me give you a little backstory. So Paul Feig was a big Ted Nugent fan.
Hmm.
And Ted Nugent was big in Michigan.
Yeah.
Jim might remember this, right? And his first choice was going to be a Nugent song. I don't remember which one. But if that had become the theme song, imagine how badly that would have aged.
Right.
Years. Thinking about what happened at Nugent. Anyway, they decided not to. They decided to go with Bad Reputation by Joan Jett. And there's this montage of them getting their school photos. It's one of the best that I've seen, just sort of intros for a show ever. It's very iconic. So you know, great song. Love to hear it. Love to hear more Joan Jett. Like every time I watch Freaks and Geeks, I'm like, why aren't I listening to Joan Jett again? Like what?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know.
It's also one of those shows that you never click the skip intro button on the thing.
Right. Like,
I watch it every time, right?
Yeah. Fantastic. So, so great theme song there. So the end of this episode, we get another choreographed scene that runs about 4.5 minutes, and it's set to one piece of music. And so this is the homecoming dance. And as the episode comes through, Sam decides, finally to get up enough courage to ask Cindy Sanders, who is actually not one of the geeks, but a very attractive cheerleader. He gets the courage up to ask her to dance, right? And the issue is that the song that is playing is Come Sail Away by Styx. Hmm. Another huge band of the era that we don't think a ton about these days, but was big in school, you know, in sort of suburban schools at the time.
Yeah.
And so what ends up happening is he walks in, he tries to approach her, he's kind of stammering, and sort of you hear Come Sail Away, you hear that sort of lilting piano intro, and it's like, this is going to be a slow dance. This is going to be a song where I could have this lovely slow dance with the girl of my dreams, and it'll be awesome. But he stammers and has, you know, takes so much time making the approach that when she finally says yes, and they get out to the dance floor, it switches to that.
Right. Meow, yeah. Meow, meow, you know?
And then he's standing there and he has to do like a fast dance, which, you know, God, that was such the experience of those days going to dances, is that like, how do I get a slow dance? And so much classic rock was played that, you know, Stairway to Heaven was a song that we played at dances. And sometimes, you know, there'd be a slow bit, there'd be a fast bit. So that is another one of the just absolutely masterful scenes in this, because if you watch it, it does play through the whole song, and there's things that happen in the sort of lead up. But the exact minute when he finally gets out onto the dance floor, that's when it switches, you know, and then suddenly he has to dance. So just, you know, again, so much care and attention was put into that. It wasn't like, well, let's write an episode about a high school dance. It's like, let's write an episode and I have to have Come Sail Away in it. And then we'll figure out the rest of it.
Right.
You know, which I just think is, again, it's just what's really unique about how music is used in that, in this show. Excellent. So now we get to episode 5, and this one is probably my favorite use of music in the series, and that is saying a lot. This episode is called I'm With the Band. And this one focuses on Jason Segel's character, Nick Andopoulos. He's not doing well in school. His dad's this really stern Air Force colonel. He says, if you don't get a C+, you're going to join the Army, you know. And but Nick is obsessed with his drum set, and he's obsessed with Rush. He's obsessed with Led Zeppelin and his drum set. And again, folks, just watch it. Yep. He has created, attempted to recreate a Neil Peart sort of drum set in his basement. And it's this motley bunch of mismatched drums and cymbals, but he does have 29 pieces, he'll tell you. 29 piece drum set, double bass. He's got this, you know, sort of a gong hanging up behind him, and he's got, like, you know, tin pans and utensils and other things hanging up behind it. You know, you just got to get the visual. You know, I'll recommend people to take a look at that. But this whole episode focuses around, so Nick has a band. And as a Nick who tried to be in bands as well in those days and had limited success, I really, really identify with this episode. So Nick is a drummer. He has Daniel DeSario as his guitarist and Ken Miller on lead vocals. And they are a band that they call Creation. And they are a terrible, terrible band. They practice in the basement. They can barely get through Sunshine of Your Love. That's the song they practice over and over again, and it's just a nightmare. Anyway, so that sort of sets the stage for this. The scene that this episode starts again with another music-based scene that will just blow you away, and the scene is Nick is on his 29-piecer. He's got his headphones on. He puts Rush into the 8-track. He puts a piece of dry ice. And he turns on his lights machines, and he's going to rock out and play along to Spirit of the Radio. We should just play this clip because, you know, that's I'll sort of leave it at that. So you'll hear him playing along, and if you watch it, you'll see the joy in his face as he's playing along and fantasizing he's Neil Peart, but you'll hear that he's not quite Neil Peart. So that is the intro to I'm With the Band. And wow, that just hits home for me on so many levels. Just sort of like, we probably have all had that experience trying to like play an instrument along to a song just kind of fantasizing that you could actually play like that. Right. And then the reality sets in. So that sort of sets it up right there. You know where this episode is going. This episode is going to sort of deal with, well, Nick is either going to end up in the Army or he's going to become a musician. And as we could tell, his skill level isn't quite there. So, you know, more things happen. And in the end, the band Creation tries to have a practice session, and it doesn't go well. Lindsay, being the ex-nerd, is like, maybe you guys should actually attempt to play a whole song so that you can practice and actually become good. And Dan's like, I don't want to play this. You know, rock music comes from your crotch, man, not from your brain and all this stuff. So they just basically have attitude and they want to sit around and just make noise in the basement. But Nick is actually thinking, this is my ticket out to actually become a musician. So the band is not working at all. So so Lindsay says, well, you know, there's this band called Dimension. I love these band names they come up with. This band, they're auditioning a new drummer. Why don't you show up for the audition? So Dimension is this sort of your typical sort of local band that opens up at Cobo Arena for Jethro Tull, you know, and that's just sort of like their hardworking band. They're in their like 20s. And Nick goes to audition for these guys. You know, he gets there and basically says, you know, I'm just not used to playing on a drum kit this small. Right. Right. So, you know, they're in trouble. And the guys in Dimension are just like looking at them like, oh boy, this is going to be great. You know? So, so they asked Nick like, you know, well, what do you want to play? for your audition. He's like, hey, how about we do Sunshine of Your Love? Because that's the only song they practice. And the leader of the band, Mike Rampage, is like, no, I hate that song. That song sucks. Let's do Crossroads, man. Let's do Crossroads. And but they're a real band, and they start up Crossroads. And as you can imagine, it does not go well. This again gets into what's so masterful about this series. It's sort of like there is no victory here. Like, I guess the victory is he tried, but he's got no hope of becoming a drummer, and it's so sad and it's so depressing. Right. But we all reach that stuff in life, especially as high schoolers. Like, sometimes you think you're going to be an astronaut, you're not going to be an astronaut, you know. And it's tough. It's tough to watch. It's sad. It's really sad because you just feel like Nick is just not gonna, he's not going to make it as a drummer. What else is he going to do with his life? But it's also just kind of hilarious. Like that scene, you know, that we heard of him drumming along to Spirit of the Radio. It's just fascinating. It's just why it's just so unique. That's why I love this show so much, because it's just so true to life and it's so well crafted. And the details are just really thought, they, you know, they really think about this. Yeah, let's make him do Crossroads. That's like, you know, to me, that's sort of like, that's like indie cred, right? Like Sunshine of Your Love is like cream, but Crossroads is real blues, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
I just want to say this one thing, Nick, and then we can move on to the next episode. But the character of Nick, the drummer, I see a lot of myself today in him in this regard. Pretty much every scene he's in any episode, he's talking about drumming or music or what have you, to the point of like just annoying people. And I was like, oh my God, that's me. That's like me at a party, or that's me trying to interact with the normals. Yeah. Like, and right, that's their reaction. You, and yeah, I'm just now seeing that. You know what I mean? So, yeah.
It is. It's, and, you know, one of the fascinating things about the character is, like, to me, someone thought a lot about like Nick's musical taste, because he has the largest sort of breadth of musical taste. Like, mm-hmm, there is a scene. So you think, yeah, he's into Zeppelin. He's into the Who. He's into the things you feel he was into. You wouldn't be surprised. But there's a scene later in the series where they're in a car and a couple of Joe Jackson songs, the early Joe Jackson songs, come on. Right. And, you know, Ken, who's sort of your very traditional burnout, is like, turn this new wave crap right off, you know? And Nick's like, no, this is good stuff, man. This is good, you know? And later he gets into disco, which is a whole thing. But he's an explorer. He's sort of, he's into music,
right?
Right? And he has a wide eclectic taste, even though what he wants to do is drum like Neil Peart and be in a traditional rock band.
But you could tell
it's a big part of him.
It's really part of him. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
So anyway. Okay. Now this one.
Cool. So episode 14, Dead Dogs and Gym Teachers. All right. So now we're getting towards the end of the run. This episode maybe has the best, I don't know. I have a hard time picking it. This is the best one. I'm going to say this is it. This music scene that I'm going to talk about next. What happens here is, so Bill Haverchuk is the nerdiest of the nerds. He's got the biggest glasses. He's tall, but he's very dorky. He's got a lot of allergies. He's not super healthy. His mom is a single mom who's used to, you know, work as like a waitress, and just life isn't easy for them. And his dad is not in his life. So what happens is, about midway through the series, we get set up several times what a big nemesis the gym teacher is for Bill specifically. Well, what ends up happening is that his mom begins dating the gym teacher. And this is a crisis of epic proportions for poor Bill, who has been humiliated in gym class several times by the same teacher.
Are you going to mention who plays the gym teacher? Is that coming up, or do you want?
This is a very good point. I forget his name, but who plays a gym teacher,
Tom
is
Wilson,
Biff.
I believe is his
name. Yes. And from Back to the Future.
He's Biff.
Oh.
Biff.
No.
Yes.
Which is a perfect casting choice, really.
That's gold.
And yeah, he's great in this. He's great.
Really,
and
is.
In fact, they start, he becomes a well-rounded character, which is another thing about all these folks in here. They're well-rounded characters. Mm-hmm. Like, you think he's going to be a stereotypical gym teacher. He turns out not to be so much. So anyway, in this episode, just to set the context, this episode, Judd Apatow wrote this. He's a huge Who fan. There is nothing but Who songs in this episode. So right there, that's amazing, right? Mm-hmm. And there's nine. I think there's like 6, 7, or 8 of them. I got the number somewhere. But what happens in this initial scene is really fascinating. So Bill is a latchkey kid. He comes home after having a humiliating day in gym class. But he has a sort of like serene moment on his own that just rings so true to me because I was, you know, my mom worked. I remember those hours of coming home like at 2:30 and just being able to hang out and watch TV and just kind of like zen out. And so what Bill does, he comes home, he makes himself a grilled cheese sandwich with a brownie. That's
there you go.
You know, and he turns on the TV. And he starts watching an episode of, I think it's the Dinosaur Show, something like that, or Mike Douglas Show. And Gary Shandling is the comedian in doing his routine. Nice. And Bill loves comedians. He loves Gary Shandling. So, but the song that you hear is I'm One by The Who, right? So from Quadrophenia. But you know, there's that sort of transition in I'm One where you get, it begins with sort of like how terrible everything is, but still I'm one and I'm sort of rising above it and I'm somehow comfortable with it all. And that's what you get from Bill. Like, as tough as his day was, now he's chilling out. He's having his grilled cheese sandwich. He's laughing at Gary Shandling. And the song is just, it's masterful. It's been cited by critics. Don't just take my word for it. I mean, critics have gone gaga over like how the music is used in this scene. And just how I'm One just fits so perfectly. I'm not sure how some of the other songs in this episode fit as perfectly, but this one is just absolutely phenomenal.
And I will be, you'll all see I'm the one. Where do you get those blue jeans, faded patch secret so tight? Where do you get that walk oh so lean? Your shoes and your shirts all just right. I'm one. I am one. And I can see that this is me. And I will be, you'll all see I'm the one.
So that's one amazing piece. And again, the music is just so integral. I don't think it works any other way. I don't think what's literally a silent scene for like 2 minutes of a kid watching TV. And as he's watching TV, his face gets larger in the screen and Gary Shandling's face gets larger. And it's sort of like he's merging into it. Like he's just sort of sinking into it. So well done. So well crafted. So there's a subplot in this episode where Lindsay wants to go to a Who concert, right? And her mom and dad are fairly conservative and kind of older. And Joe Flaherty is her dad. And I don't know if you remember him from SCTV. He's somewhat recognizable. I used to love that show back in the day. Obviously, they are resistant to their daughter going to a Who concert, knowing that, you know, there are going to be drugs and people were trampled the year before. I mean, going to a Who concert in 1980, it was some risk, especially knowing sort of what had happened fairly recently. So they're very much against it. So Lindsay says, you know, he starts comparing them to punk rock and how terror smashing their guitars and it's a nightmare. How could you see these terror? And so Lindsay says, why don't you just listen to their music and then see if you change their mind? So Mr. and Mrs. Weir agree to listen to a Who album, and the one they end up getting handed to them is the Who by Numbers. And the first song they listen to is Squeezebox. So
kind of catchy.
Yeah. I like the banjo.
Mom's got a squeeze box she wears on her chest.
But daddy, what are you saying, squeeze box?
No,
is it just me or does that sound filthy?
Honey, I think it's about an accordion.
Mama's got a squeeze box, daddy never sleeps at night.
What?
It's nice.
In and out and in and out.
Like the instrument.
Gene, that is not about an accordion. That is in and out.
Yeah, the in and out.
In and out, in and off is what it's going.
Boy, so other Who songs in this episode, I'm Free, Boris the Spider, Going Mobile, Drowned is in there. This is one 42-minute episode. Mind you, and there's one other masterful use that I'll just mention quickly. There's a Love Rain Over Me is used also in this, and this is a scene where It finally becomes apparent to Bill that the gym teacher is with his mom, because he wakes up in the morning and there's the gym teacher coming down in his, you know, in his shorts, having slept right. over that night. And he starts getting orange juice and pouring it, and you hear "Love Rain Over Me" in the background. It's just like, it's just the, like the trauma of that, like of that emotion. You could see it in Bill's face. So great, just real tribute to the Who's music. And, you know, interestingly enough, they were concerned about getting music from the Who, but it was no problem. The Who or their management or whoever was like, look, you want these songs, you got them. Like, they were completely behind it, which always surprised me a little bit. Maybe they were behind it because they got all 9 songs in one episode. I don't know.
But, yeah, maybe.
But, well, I think pretty, we saw later well. With CSI, things like that, that I don't think Pete really, you know,
true, there you
cared
go.
That much
right.
about how it was used, just, you know, as long as the check's cashed. But anyway, yeah. In this case, it worked out great to everyone's benefit.
Exactly. So one last note here. So this is the one quibble I have with this series using music. So I had to bring it up because it's the kind of person I am. So there's a story arc very towards the end where Daniel decides he wants to become a punker, and that's the word he uses because he doesn't really know. He meets this girl who's, you know, got the spiked hair and is into punk rock, and he's like, I need to impress her, so I want to go to a punk club. That club, by the way, is named the Armpit, which I thought is another just masterful decision to call the club the Armpit. But anyway, so Daniel's life is pretty bad. His home life isn't great. His dad is like got health issues. His mom is a wreck. They live on the other side of the tracks. And you see the scene where Daniel's just sort of dealing with all of that. And it's a nightmare. And he goes into his bedroom, puts the headphones on, and puts on Black Flag. And we hear Rise Above in his headphones. And it's just, it's fantastic because you just the spirit of that song, and sort of like, I'm just like, this is my escape. I'm going to rise above this. Of course, the quibble is that album came out at the end of 1981. The series ends like in early 1981. So technically it's a little out of scope. That bothers me because I'm that kind of a nerd, but it's actually really great. It's really fantastic use of that song. And it's one I hadn't thought of in a long time, but you sort of see, I did wonder a little bit about that. I certainly didn't know a lot of kids that were into punk rock. I think that I was at that time starting to get in touch with folks that are into alternative or post-punk, but actually sort of going to a punk club and slam dancing and all that just wasn't really in there. So I felt like that was a little bit of a stretch. What I did read was that James Franco actually pushed that storyline. That wasn't originally in it. But great song. Nice to hear it in the soundtrack. Add it to the other 120. And to me, it's really unique. I don't think there's really been anything like it before or since, at least on network TV, certainly. I think there's comparable sort of like, you know, I guess Mad Men sort of comes to mind as like, you know, licensing a lot of expensive music and really trying to hit the period pieces. But this is, even that show, it's window dressing mostly. The music here is such a part of the characters and the plot. It's not, you know, it's integral. Right. So.
Okay. Great.
That's all I have to say about
Amazing.
I can let that go now. But yes, folks, it's on Hulu. I would just say, and I do not work for Hulu. I have no economic interest, but get your free month and watch this.
That's
it's 18 episodes. It's 18 episodes. You can do it in a weekend. I definitely think it'll, knowing the Rock in the Suburbs community and anyone else here, I think folks will really enjoy it and relate to it.
Absolutely. All right. Well, thank you for that, Nick. That was awesome.
Thank you.
Very cool. I'm going to do that. The free month.
Do it.
Free trial.
Okay. This is great. So,
fabulous.
If anyone out there would like to comment on Freaks and Geeks, I'm sure we're going to get some comments on this. So you can do that. You can call, leave a message. We'll follow this up, with your voice on another episode. Call 612-440-1984. There you go. Or email rock@suburbspod.com or find us on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram and leave comments there. All those @suburbspod. All right. I think we forgot to introduce ourselves at the beginning of the show, so we'll do that now. thanks again, Nick Scalera. It's Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
And with us has been
Nick Scalera.
All right. We'll talk to you all later. We'll be right back.
But you feel alone and confused, and you don't think anyone understands. Well, I do. Lots of people do. Even Mr. Alice Cooper. Bet you don't think he's a square, do you?
No, man. Alice Cooper rocks.
Do you know this song? Lines form on my face and hands. Lines form from the ups and downs. I'm in the middle without any plans. I'm a boy or girl, and I'm a man or woman. I'm 18. I get confused every day. 18, I just don't know what to say. 18, I gotta get away. Come on, Nick, fill in those drums there, will ya? Oh, yeah. You guys know what I'm talking about? Is this making any sense at all? I think it is.